Hello, this is Dee with the Vermilion County News for May 27th, 2019. We'll begin our reading today with the front page story entitled Waiting and Watching: Voters Keep an Eye on the Upcoming Election by Jennifer Bailey. Danville. 78-year-old Vince Kears has been a President Donald Trump supporter, but whether he'd vote for him again in 2020 remains to be seen. It depends who shows up as a viable candidate against him, Kears said. This is the fifth part of a Pulse of the Voters project of talking to local residents on voting and issues important to them. The Commercial News and other Community Newspaper Holdings, Inc. newspapers have been collaboratively working on the project since last year. Kears said, at first thought, Trump was a joke. He still thinks Twitter should be shut off, being a poor choice of medium for Trump. In the last election, I was an anybody but her voter, the retired General Motors engineer said about Hillary Clinton and her history. Kears said he grew up in a Democratic family, but his mother became a diehard Republican due to her values. He recalls her saying, I didn't leave the party left me. Kears was born in Indiana, but has lived in Danville since 1972. He said about his voting record, over the years, I meandered. I'd like to find a good Democrat that speaks my values. I don't see them, he said. But Kears said he's always supports a person, not the party. Kears has continued to attend city council meetings and be interested in local politics. He's also served as a Republican precinct committeeman. He's been vocal about wanting to see the city step up and fix drainage issues, such as the ones in his neighborhood. Environmental and pension issues are important to him. Kears said he's also anti-abortion, a constitutionalist, and says he looks at service to the country in candidates because he's a veteran. I'm a concealed carry permit owner, but don't carry, he said. Overall, Kears said his political mood right now is optimistic. New voter Matthias Miles, after volunteering his time and working as an election judge in Rossville during the 2016 presidential election, was a little frustrated that he could not yet vote. He was 17 then and had done his research and was leaning toward Democratic candidate Bernie Sanders in the primary election. Miles, who was a 2017 Schlarman Academy graduate and now a sophomore at Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana, is majoring in video production and minoring in political science. In addition to being a full-time student, he's a peer minister at Grace Village Campus Ministry and works video for a mayoral campaign in Muncie. His goal is to go into video production full-time after college, independently, or work for someone else and build some place to fully operate on his own. He also plans to keep politically active. Miles said his political interest stems from his family. My family is very politically aware, not necessarily politically active, he said. He started getting more involved in 2015 when the net neutrality issue came up, and he wanted to get more involved in the Democratic Party. He went to the Vermilion County Democratic Party headquarters and met some party leaders and started volunteering with the 2016 election. He also was involved with last year's midterm election and also attended a WILL Illinois public media discussion prior to the recent City of Danville election. Miles is really looking forward to voting in the 2020 presidential election. He's been attending both the campus Republican and Democratic meetings to see both of the party perspectives. Right now, Miles said he's excited in what he sees in Pete Buttigieg, the 37-year-old Democratic mayor of South Bend, Indiana. He's been my favorite of the candidates so far. I like his youth and his energy. Miles said he also knows some people who live in the South Bend area and have said Buttigieg has done a lot of good work in their area. Miles said good leaders are what we could use in the national level. He said he felt a lot of pride when voting for the first time in the midterm elections last year for governor and other races. Issues important to Miles include college debt burden, and free college tuition. He said due to federal rebudgeting, a bigger federal loan was cut. Other issues important to Miles include free speech and Second Amendment issues. I'm not extremely pro or anti-gun, but I think there should be more regulations, he said about all 50 states. He added gun violence hits home in Danville and states with more relaxed gun laws. He said during Christmas break, someone he knew from high school died because of a misfiring of a weapon. It's a very big issue, Miles said. Other big issues to Miles include LGBT rights along the lines of anything discriminatory. He said, as a person of color, he feels no one should be discriminated on the color of their skin, race, sexual orientation, and religion. Miles said he wants to see politicians address these issues and other solutions. He said his support kind of shifted from Hillary Clinton to Bernie Sanders in 2016, when Sanders had tangible evidence and research on how to pay for free public college and rebuilding our infrastructure. People coming out with plans for these is a mark of a good, organized candidate. Miles said about 80% of his opinion on a candidate comes from the candidate's views, and 20% comes from the candidate's history and also current standing. He said he might agree with a candidate's current views, but his or her past history might not align with his or her current views, or his or her actions had consequences on other people. He said with President Donald Trump in office, he doesn't think Trump's rhetoric is helping. Also, having a lack of dialogue at the local and national levels. Miles is erring more on the side of concern right now about politics in general. However, he's excited for Julia Wilson, a founder of Working Out PTSD, which pays for gym memberships for qualified veterans, and has expanded to raise money to help veterans in other ways, such as buying service dogs, says veteran issues are very high priority for her when voting. Wilson, who was a Catlin High School graduate, was a stay-at-home mom for about 20 years, and now is a church secretary, says she mostly remembers voting more when her kids became teenagers, and she wanted to make a good impression on them by trying to do my civic duty to vote. She said other characteristic and issues that are important to her in political candidates are morality and ethics. We're Christians. She said she supports any legislation that is pro-life. I tried to choose people who have strong moral values, and I'm an advocate of doing your research and doing your own investigation. This is what Wilson said about candidates. I vote for the candidate, not necessarily for the party. She said she votes for candidates who have her same values. If a person has basic morality, I feel like they will make good choices. Wilson added another important issue to her is employment. Over the years, Wilson said she's voted for more Republican candidates. She said of President Donald Trump, I think his record stands for what he's accomplished. He's fighting an uphill battle, all levels of things, trying to bring him down. I myself think he's doing a great job. Our country seems to be in a better place than for a long time, she added, saying Trump is running the country like a business. She said for the 2020 presidential election, she'll see how things proceed and research the candidates. Martha Espino, 66, has continued to be an active community member, including as an election judge, and considers herself a longtime active voter. She said, as the old saying goes, don't complain if you don't get up and vote. Espino, who was born in Mexico and has lived in Danville for about 44 years, came to Vermilion County when her father was a migrant worker in Hoopston. She initially lived in Fair Oaks Public Housing Complex. Espino works as a case coordinator for the Department of Rehabilitation Services. Prior to that, she worked in the public aid office for 18 years. She graduated high school in Mexico and attended college for a couple years and received a secretarial skills certification. The mother of two said she's voted more Democratic, but looks at the candidate. Concerning the last presidential election, Espino said people continued to say Hillary Clinton was a crook, but what about Trump? The United States is not ready for a woman president, Espino said. But she wonders whether Elizabeth Warren or someone else like Michelle Obama might be able to win the White House as a female candidate. Espino said she's also liked Bernie Sanders. She said she's glad to see a lot more women as senators and in other political positions, such as Chicago mayor. I also defend my race and who I am, she said of her Hispanic heritage. She doesn't support Trump's proposed wall and says Trump speaks bad about Mexicans and he gives fuel to people to hate. She thinks there needs to be more restricted gun laws, and she's pro-life, but says there are certain serious situations, such as if a woman's life is in danger. She said she can tell when candidates are humble versus being fake. Our next article is entitled Few Signs of Shifts by Bill Ketter, CNHI News Service. Despite the inflammatory mixture of fact, fear, and lies that has woven its way deeply into America's body politic, there are few signs of significantly shifting attitudes in the heartland on who should be elected the nation's president in 2020. The critical states that gave President Donald Trump the margin of Electoral College victory in 2016 are again uncertain, as thorny issues such as tariff-induced trade wars, immigration, contratemps, and the Mueller investigation have rattled voters. Iowa, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Wisconsin, with their collective 70 electoral votes, could again decide if Trump is given a second term or if the nation moves to whomever the Democrats select from a field of 23 potential challengers. It depends on who you talk to in those states. Depressed corn and soybean markets could make a difference in rural areas, which went all in for Trump last time. Some say whether that concern is sufficient to offset the perceptions of an otherwise rosy economy is anyone's guess. Another important factor is the political tenets of the eventual Democratic nominee. They range from far left to moderate among the aspirants. These are general impressions of the current political landscape in more than 20 Rust Belt, Midwest, and Southern states served by CNHI newspapers that have participated in the company's periodic Pulse of the Voters project since the 2016 election. Reporters walked precincts, knocked on doors, met with voters in their living rooms, their kitchens, and elsewhere, engaging them in conversation about their views heading into another presidential election cycle. In Oklahoma, where Trump won overwhelmingly in 2016, Tahlequah resident Patrick Parker said it's hard to trust either side at this point. He described Trump as the Jar Jar Binks of presidents, a reference to the fictional Star Wars character who was both loved and hated. Pennsylvania, in play of the must-win states, Pennsylvania seemed most susceptible to swing from Trump to Democrat. Native son Joe Biden's entry into the party's swarm of candidates has so far made a difference. The most recent state polls showed Biden, Obama's vice president for two terms, leading Trump by 11 points. Dressed up in gray polo shirt with the United Mine Workers of America logo, John Klein spoke from his dining room table in Nicktown, one-time mining and steelmaking citadel in western Pennsylvania. He said Biden could break Trump's stranglehold on rural voters in the state if he runs from the political middle and strives to end partisan bickering by bringing people together. I believe moderate people, Democrat and Republican, drive this country, said Klein. Extreme left, extreme right, you can see what's going on around us. Brothers Jim and John Ferguson, retired math teachers, sat drinking coffee and talking politics outside a cafe overlooking Scranton's Courthouse Square in northeast Pennsylvania. They agreed Trump could lose the state and said they'd gladly vote for Biden if he wins the Democratic nomination. Jim Ferguson said he's bothered by the president's penchant for lying and contradicting himself and his subordinates. He goes and leaks the news that he's considering sending 120,000 troops to the Middle East, and then when it's reported, he says it's not true. You don't know what to believe, Still, he added, the president's core isn't giving up on him. The sheer number of Democrats running to challenge Trump is making it difficult for opposition to the president to consolidate behind one candidate. Among that core is Jackie Leone, owner of Headhunter's Hair Salon in Scranton. A Democrat turned Republican, she voted for Trump in 2016 and likes him cracking down on liberal immigration policies. There's some bad people, she said. You're getting killers and everything. Rural Pennsylvania delivered Trump's victory last time, and Monday night it was the site of his latest political rally in the borough of Montoursville near Williamsport. He accused Biden of abandoning Pennsylvania for Delaware, where he served 7 terms as a U.S. senator. He left you for another state, and he didn't take care of you because he didn't take care of your jobs, said Trump. He let other countries come in and rip off America. That doesn't happen anymore. Trump's message won't move Marissa McIntyre, 24, mother of a toddler and a pro-choice advocate. She said defeating Trump is not an option, it's a necessity for women everywhere, for minorities everywhere, for everyone whose voice over the past almost 3 years now has just been muted. McIntyre works as a breastfeeding counselor for the Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children in Meadville, Pennsylvania. She proudly wore a March On t-shirt purchased at a thrift store. My biggest thing is that we're back in this time frame where women are treated as property yet again, she said. Drake Parker, 54, also of Meadville, doesn't buy the argument that as a black voter, he should reject the president. He said he voted for Trump last time, and he expects to do so again. I get backlash for that, said Parker, president of the local NAACP chapter. He said Trump voters are willing to put aside his character, which leaves much to be desired, and the way he carries himself, because of the strong economy. He's done a phenomenal job, in my opinion, said Parker. Few voters acknowledged reading Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report on the investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election, a report that cleared Trump and his campaign of conspiring with the Russians, but also cited instances of possible obstruction of justice by the president in trying to shut down the inquiry. Partisan battles over congressional investigations into the findings have dominated Washington since the report's release April 18th. Robert Buhner, a 20-year-old prosecutor in Pennsylvania's Montour County and a lifelong Republican, said he read the complete redacted public report. He described Mueller as a straight shooter, absolutely unflappable and honest, adding that providing any kind of obstruction is difficult in court. Buhner praised Trump's tough approach to China's trade policies, with stiff tariffs on imported goods. Trade has been unbalanced in their favor, he said, and they've been stealing our intellectual property. In the farm states of Iowa and Ohio, polls show Trump remains popular with steadfast Republican voters, but the pain that his tariff war with China has caused corn and soybean producers may take a toll. Recently, Iowa's long-serving Republican legislator, State Representative Andy McKean of Anamosa, changed his party affiliation to Democratic in response to what he called Trump's unacceptable behavior and reckless spending. The nonprofit polling from Morning Consult in Ohio recently reported Trump's popularity is slipping in the state. He won by 8 percentage points in 2016. One reason may be that General Motors closed its assembly plant in Lordstown, Ohio, in March as part of a corporate restructuring. That caused Trump to tweet, "I am not happy." Iowa, New Hampshire, in February 2020, the February 3rd Iowa caucuses will provide the first breakdown of the top tier Democratic candidates. Those who do poorly traditionally drop out for lack of money. Biden polls show is currently favored to emerge with the plurality of the caucus votes. 8 days later, on February 11th, New Hampshire stages the nation's first presidential primary, an outsized contest in a small population state where walking about, door knocking, and pressing the flesh rather than flashy ad campaigns can determine the outcome. The winner will get a momentum boost, but not necessarily enough to capture the Democratic nomination. And now we'll turn to obituaries. The first is Arlie Brown, who passed away May 23, 2019, in Midway, Arkansas, at the age of 78. A visitation for Arlie Bud Brown was held yesterday from 2 to 5 p.m. at Kirby and Family Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will be in the Centerville Centennial Cemetery, Villa Grove, Illinois. Memorials may be made to a charity of your choice. Raymond M. Sloger, 81, of Danville, passed away May 22nd at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. A visitation for Raymond will be 1 to 2 p.m. Tuesday, May 28th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street, Danville. A private family graveside service will be held later. Virginia Mae Smith, 94, of Danville, passed away on May 22nd in peace at the North Logan Nursing Home in Danville. A service will be held at 2 p.m. Wednesday, May 29th, at Sunset Memorial Park in the Chapel Mausoleum in Danville. Officiating will be Pastor Doug Knapp. Entombment will be at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Memorial donations to the Danville Library Foundation in Danville. James Edward Kraft, 91, of Hot Springs, Arkansas, passed away peacefully Wednesday, May 22nd. Mary H. Garman, 59, of Covington, Indiana, and formerly of Edgar County, Illinois, passed away at 5:05 a.m. Friday, May 24th, at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Following cremation, a memorial visitation will be held from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Thursday, May 30th, in Stewart and Carroll Funeral Home. Memorial services will be conducted at 10 a.m. Friday, May 31st, in Stewart and Carroll Funeral Home. A memorial service will also be held at 10 a.m. on May 31st at Stewart and Carroll Funeral Home, Eastwood Street, Paris, Illinois. Victor J. Vic Tarquini passed away at 7 p.m. Tuesday, May 21st, in Danville, Illinois. A celebration of Vic's life will be at 11 a.m. Tuesday, May 28th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Visitation will be 4 to 7 p.m. today at the funeral home. He will be laid to rest at Sunset Memorial Park. Memorial contributions may be made to the American Legion Post 210, 40 and 8, or Honor Guard. Judith Ann Lord, 72, of Danville, passed away at 4:06 a.m. Thursday, May 23rd, at her home. A graveside service will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, May 28th, at Oak Hill Cemetery, Danville. Lisa Sarasi Allred, 55, of Carson City, Nevada, formerly of Danville, passed away peacefully April 23, 2019, at her home. They ask to join them in celebrate the life of Lisa Sarasi Allred from 4 to 8 p.m. Saturday, June 1st, at the Possum Trot Supper Club, Batestown Road, just west of Danville. John Robert Graves, 67, of Willis, Texas, and a former Perrysville, Indiana resident, died December 7, 2018. Graveside memorial services, 11 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Saturday, June 1st, in Gordon Cemetery, Danville. A gathering of family and friends will follow the service at Hampton Inn, Eastgate Drive. David Moose Lee Palmer, 66, of Danville, passed away Friday, May 17, 2019, doing what he loved, camping. There will be a graveside service at 11 a.m. Tuesday, May 28th, at Spring Hill Cemetery, East Voorhees Street in Danville, with Pastor Ramey Gordon officiating. Margaret Skimmahorn, 92, of Danville, died at 5:40 a.m. Saturday, May 25th, at Hawthorne Inn. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Rortvedt Funeral Services, Tilton. Donald Don Eugene Johnson, 80, went to be with our Lord and Savior on Sunday, May 26th, at Carle Foundational Hospital in Urbana. A celebration of life service will be at 6:30 p.m. Wednesday, May 29th at Cedar Grove Church of the Nazarene, 12659 East 2100 North Road, Danville. Officiating will be Pastor William Wiggins. Visitation will be held prior to the service from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. at the church. In lieu of other expressions of sympathy, the family requests plants or donations be made to Cedar Grove Church of the Nazarene. Next article is entitled Graduated Tax Rate Bill Moves to the House Floor, Springfield. A graduated tax rate bill joined the constitutional amendment that would allow for the implementation of such a tax structure awaiting a vote from the full Illinois House Friday. The bill, which adopts the same rates approved by the state Senate, was advanced by the House Revenue and Finance Committee on a 9-6 party line vote, with two swing vote Democrats who serve on the committee having been replaced with substitutes. Representative Mike Zalewski, a Riverside Democrat and House sponsor of Senate Bill 687, said he expects the House to take up the full amendment and rate structure package next week. The committee did not act on a separate bill that would have created a conditional property tax freeze on school districts if the state meets certain funding requirements. Zalewski said property tax relief would be an ongoing discussion in the summer. I think it's the intent of the caucuses to try to work toward a summer task force to deal with property tax relief. He said property tax relief cannot really be addressed in the income tax code. It's a very hard bridge to gap, so we're going to try to work on a solution where we address property tax relief. It should be part of the conversation, but it's hard to entwine the two. Democrat Republicans Sam Yingling of Grayslake and Jonathan Carroll of Northbrook have both said publicly they would not support a graduated tax plan that does not offer more systemic property tax relief. Both serve on the Revenue and Finance Committee, but were replaced on the committee with substitutes Friday by Democratic House Speaker Mike Madigan. Even if the plan passes the full House, it would not take effect unless a constitutional amendment, Senate Joint Resolution Constitutional Amendment 1, allowing a graduated rate structure, is approved by the full chamber, then by voters in November 2020. Carroll previously voted to pass the amendment out of committee, but said his vote did not mean he would support the measure on the floor. While the amendment would need 71 of the chamber's 74 Democrats to vote for it, the rate structure only requires 60 yes votes. Per the rate structure approved by committee Friday, single filers would pay the maximum rate of 7.99% on all income once their taxable income tops $750,000. For joint filers, that rate takes effect when income tops $1 million. The bill also includes an increase in the property tax credit from 5% to 6%, and a $100 per child tax credit for couples earning less than $100,000 and single persons earning less than $80,000. Currently, the state constitution mandates that taxes be leveled at a flat rate. The current rate is 4.95%. Democrats said Illinois needs the estimated $3.5 billion in revenue the bill would generate to close structural budget deficits and give the state the stability it needs to attract new residents and business. The House is scheduled to reconvene Sunday, May 26, with substantial action expected to begin on Monday. In response to claims that the state's constitutionally mandated flat tax is attractive to businesses, Zalewski said it's only recently that this claim has been made. There hasn't been a celebration of Illinois flat tax over the last 10 years around here, he said. I've never seen a TV commercial or an online ad that said, thank God we have the flat tax. This is a reason people need to come to Illinois. This has been Dee reading the Vermilion County News for May 27, 2019. I hope you have a great day, and I look forward to reading with you again soon.